This is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week this season, I'm talking to someone who is walking forward by faith, many of them through difficult circumstances. We're asking the question, how does God meet us in our deepest, darkest pain, and how does He turn that pain into beauty? Guys, before we get to my guest today, I want to tell you quickly about two things. One, to close season one of the podcast, I'm going to do an Ask Me Anything episode. One of my closest friends is going to join me and we'll discuss anything you send in. Two, I am loving doing these podcasts and have big plans for it. Recently, I asked one question to pastor's wives on my author Facebook page, and I got so many responses that I decided to do a mini season this summer just for pastor's wives. I'm also already interviewing folks for season two. If you're enjoying these podcasts, would you consider supporting this work? In the show notes of this episode, you can just scroll down and you'll see them. There is a link where you can submit a question for the Ask Me Anything episode and where you can find out more about how you can support the podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, let's get to it. Today, my guest on the show is Jamie Brick. Jamie is a wife, mom of three, and a teacher of kids with autism. I first got to know Jamie when my family and I still lived in Texas. She and I attended the same church, and soon after we moved to Virginia, Jamie told me that she had a problem with alcohol. I had no idea, and there were several reasons for that, which you're going to hear us talk about in our conversation today. So not only will you hear about Jamie's dependence upon alcohol and how God has acted in her life since she confessed that problem, but you'll hear us talk about friendship and community and what keeps us isolated from one another. So friends, here is my conversation with Jamie. Thank you, Jamie, so much for joining me today on my podcast.
So fun.
I'm glad to get to talk to you because we actually knew each other when I lived in College Station. And we still know each other, but we haven't lived in the same town in 10 years.
I can't believe it's been 10 years.
I know. So we got to know each other when our kids were really little. And I think I met you through a Bible study at our church.
And yes, I think so, yeah.
Our kids are similarly aged, and so we just kind of started doing play dates after Bible study. Is that right? I think that's right.
I think it was Chick-fil-A every Tuesday. Yes.
Yeah. Chick-fil-A in the mall because they had the playground.
Yes.
And it's funny because, so my kids, when we moved away from College Station, were 5, 2, and 6 months. So yours were maybe a little older, like 6, 5, and 2
maybe. Yeah. Well, or one close.
Yeah. And the truth is, and I know I've shared this with you before, but the truth is that I think that we were just touching the surface of a friendship.
Yeah.
Because I was going through a lot with our oldest child. I was really struggling. I was really struggling, but I was not yet at the place where I was very open about that. I was kind of closed off friendship wise. And I'm sure you recognize that. You were very patient with me, but I look back at that time and I think I didn't really let myself be known by Jamie and I didn't really know her, but we hung out quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that I appreciated our friendship because our oldest were the same age. And so we were kind of doing some of the things first. Like, I mean, I remember the first time I spoke to you was when I dropped Hannah off in the nursery.
Yeah.
And I was near tears. And I think you were sitting next to the table and I was just so unsure. And I think I felt like I connected with you just in that moment. And so I wanted a friendship with you. And I just think our kids being the same age, we had some surface, just things in common that
yeah.
kept us a little connected.
Yeah. And I think of all the stuff for me that was going on under the surface that I never shared with you.
Yes.
It makes me kind of sad. It makes me sad that I was not at that place. And I struggled a lot with loneliness in College Station. But I look back at that and I think that was a lot my own fault. It wasn't that I didn't have opportunities. you know, I had other, you and other people that I would spend time with, but I didn't really let people in. I wasn't very vulnerable. And so that's something I really regret. And I chose to do it differently in Charlottesville, but I really wish that I'd done that with you in college.
I know. I think that we could have been great friends. We
still Yes. And I think one of the things too, there were things under the surface for you that later you told me about. And so that's what I wanted to talk to you about today. And that was alcohol, that there are issues with alcohol for you. And I would love for you just to kind of tell us a little bit of your story.
Yes. It's so interesting. I remember before y'all left for Charlottesville, you actually approached me and asked me to consider praying. You asked my husband and I to consider praying about, or to pray to consider going to Charlottesville. And we did talk about it a little bit. And I don't know if I've even ever told you this, but I was still actively drinking at that time. And I remember thinking, there's no way, if she knew me, if she knew really who I was, that she would want me anywhere near that church. And we pray, and it didn't, I mean, it wasn't a thing for us to do, but, so I used to drink too much. I, started drinking in high school a little bit, and then in college. Growing up, I never really had healthy examples of alcohol use. It was always around. It was always the right thing. It wasn't just for celebrations or for, you know, special occasions. It was always just what my family did. So it was not foreign to me. It was not some sort of rebellious thing. It was just always around.
Yeah. So when you had small children and when we knew each other, we started to get to know each other, had alcohol become a problem for you?
I think that it was, I think that I never had a healthy relationship with alcohol. However, I was not abusing alcohol when my children were very, very young. I had no problem. I did not drink when I was pregnant. That was not an issue for me. I didn't have a problem. What it was at first was kind of, I would drink rarely, but when I did drink, I drank too much. So it wasn't a daily thing. It was just when I would drink, it would be too much, which kind of was explained, you know, I justified it by, well, I don't do it very often. So when I, you know, and even my husband would say, well, you don't get out much, you know, you don't do it very often. So that, like, maybe I just didn't know how to drink, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So looking back, when did you realize that that was an issue? What made you realize it was an issue for you?
It happened. I had some of those nights. I had several kind of within a short period of time. I also, at the end of my drinking, I was working at the church. I was working, and I had, in fact, signed a covenant saying that I would not drink alcohol. And when I signed it, the thought was never, would I really not drink? It was, how would I not get caught? Which now, looking back, that right there is a signal. And so it became a problem when I was living a double life. And the last night that I drank too much, I was with people I didn't know, and I didn't know if they knew people, like they knew church people, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't do the waking up in the middle of the night and hating myself anymore.
Mm-hmm. So there was a specific night where you kind of said to yourself, this is a problem and this is it. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yes.
Can you describe kind of that thought process that you went through that night?
Yeah, I was at a party, like with my husband's work friends, and I had been drinking before we went to the party, and I passed out at the party, and I woke up, and I was all alone in this living room, and I was so embarrassed. I was just so filled with shame, and I stood up and walked into the other room where the people were, and nobody cared. Nobody said anything. You know, I felt just really just completely embarrassed, but nobody's commented, nobody said anything. And we went home, and I didn't sleep well. And the next morning I was actually working at church, and a friend of mine came up to me to give me a hug good morning. And I just, for some reason, clung to her, and I whispered in her ear, "I think I have a problem." Mm. And so I guess that was it. I had said that I'd had a problem before. I don't know that I used the word problem, but I had thought I should quit before. But this time I needed help. And that's what I said. I said, "I need help." I had tried to quit before without help, and I had gotten to the point where I needed help.
Mm-hmm. Had anybody ever tried to ask you about it before? Had your husband put up red flags or?
No. And I've thought about that over the years. And, you know, sometimes people in recovery or in different groups say you have to hit rock bottom before you get help. And I am forever grateful that I had a high bottom. I didn't get in trouble. I didn't get hurt, or, you know, I didn't, right. I was close to those kind of things, but I didn't. And in fact, some people thought I was being overly dramatic, that I was, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal, that I wasn't as in a bad place that I thought I was. So no, I didn't have anyone really talk to me about it or bring it up.
But you knew you were in a bad place. You knew it was a problem because why?
I knew it was a problem because I was having to hide it. I was having to hide my drinking. And I feel it was the Holy Spirit now, but I just was living such a, what I felt was a double life. Now that I've heard other stories and I've been around some recovery, I acknowledge that I was in a high, my bottom was high. I did not get, and I'm so grateful for that. Yeah. I'm so grateful that I didn't have to lose my job or wreck my car or get arrested.
Yes.
Now I did things that could have gotten me there, but I don't know why I just recognized it.
What do you think drove that drinking for you? Was it just, it became a physical habit, or was there something behind it now that you can look at and say, maybe it was related to emotions, or it was related to a spiritual issue, or?
Sure. Yeah. I was not physically addicted to alcohol. I did not have, when I quit drinking, I did not have physical symptoms. And for a long time, I said it was alcohol, that my issue was alcohol. What I came to realize is that my alcohol was what I was using, but really what it was feelings of inadequacy. I felt inadequate, and I felt inadequate in many different areas. And what I used was alcohol to kind of numb those feelings. But it took several years even for me to figure out that that was what it was.
So take us through okay, you told your friend. Was this friend somebody that you knew what to do?
You know, I honestly don't. I think she was just the first one that day. So I had seen a flyer in the bathroom for a program and that offered some recovery. And there was a name on it. And so I just emailed the woman.
At church, right?
Yes, at church. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I emailed the woman and just said I needed to talk to somebody. And she emailed me back and said that she would call me that night. And so it was a Monday night, and I put my kids to bed and I went for a drive, and I went to the Walmart parking lot. I remember sitting in the Walmart parking lot, really honestly praying that she wouldn't call, that she would. I didn't know her, but she called me and we talked for probably 45 minutes that night. And there was a meeting that week. And so I told her I would come and I would just try it. I'd also had a doctor's appointment that week, which was just the Lord's timing, because I had called in probably October to get in with a new doctor, and he couldn't see me until December. And so I went into this new doctor and I just decided to go all in. I filled out the questionnaire, and, you know, they asked, "Do you drink?" And I said, "Yes." And they asked how much. And for some reason at this point, I just decided I needed help. And so I was very honest on that form, and which now I see as the Lord's timing, that I would be at this point and I would be getting help and had a meeting lined up that same day. Yeah.
So you went to the meeting. Did you go to the meeting?
I did go to the meeting. It was awful. I didn't talk. I didn't, probably for 6 months, I would even say I didn't talk. I used to cross my leg and my foot would shake so much the whole time. I was really embarrassed to be even there, which is funny because everyone was there for something. It wasn't like I was going to a place where people went when they needed help, and I was still really filled with shame.
You said it was when you said it was awful, do you mean because you just were so embarrassed?
I was so embarrassed. Yeah. I was so embarrassed. I was embarrassed and I was scared. I didn't know what life looked like without drinking.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about this in a bigger scope too, because Christians and alcohol, that's an interesting combination to talk about, but alcohol is becoming a much more accepted thing for Christians to participate in. And I wonder what your perspective is, not about the right or wrongness of it, but what are your concerns now for young women or men who are growing up in a culture where it's much more accepted? Does that concern you?
I think that it is socially acceptable to drink alcohol. I think that, the church kind of as a whole is probably more accepting of some things that they used to not be, including drinking. In general, just in society, it's always seems like it's a good time to drink, or that drinking is what your reward is for making it through. I have read several articles recently, and it was talking about young mothers and alcohol and mommy juice and mommy playdates. And it does concern me because it does concern me. I just don't want it to be so okay.
Mm-hmm. It seems like that I see the same kinds of things, and it seems like there's a really fine line that some things that can be enjoyed in life, can be enjoyed rightly, can easily turn into a crutch or a full-blown addiction. It can be something that we look to for comfort or hope, and that can be anything. That could be food, that could be a relationship. And so do you think that there were some aspects of that for you that contributed to the problem? Did you look at alcohol as a crutch or as a hope or a comfort?
I did. I did look for alcohol as a comfort. I think that it sort of took the edge off of any sort of uncomfortable feeling I had, and I didn't want to feel uncomfortable. I think that's true for a lot of people. They don't like to feel uncomfortable. And so whatever it is, if it's alcohol or if it's food or shopping, I think that somewhere along the way, we've decided that we should be happy and that we should feel good. And so anytime I didn't feel happy or good, I wanted to fix that. And so my first choice was alcohol. Mm-hmm.
Do you recognize now that you are sober? Do you still recognize how you turn toward other things for similar?
Yeah, I do. I do still struggle with this, and I have over the years when alcohol was taken out of the equation, and so it's almost been 10 years since I've had alcohol, I have turned to other things. Different things over the years, and I've had to work on that. I've had to acknowledge that. I've had to, I still have a sponsor. I still have somebody that I check in with. And so, you know, I think I thought that I would be one and done, that I would get this and I would be fine and I would be great and it would never be a problem, but it still is sometimes. Mm-hmm. And It's ongoing. And I think that really for most all of us, it's ongoing. It just depends on the level of self-medication or the level of what we're using to get through.
Could you, for those who are listening, who are thinking, do I have a crutch that I turn to? How have you learned to recognize when you are putting your hope in something that's a false hope?
I think that for me, I have recognized like the physical, there are some physical feelings that I have that I can tell I want to get to leave my body. Like I can get really, my chest gets really tight and I want it to go away. And my first thought is not to pray them away. But I think that what I have to do and what I choose to do is just speak it out loud, to say out loud, like, I don't like the way this feels. I don't. And the Lord has met me in that. He comes when I call for him, and I just have to remember to do that and to choose to do that. And sometimes I don't choose to do it. I think that if someone has some sort of habit or some sort of activity that they do regularly that kind of takes them out of their, you know, like an escape thing, I think it's wise to examine your motives for that and what you're feeling when you choose to binge watch on Netflix or when you choose to get on Amazon or eat whatever.
It seems a few things are sticking out from what you're saying to me. And one thing is that you said we don't like to be uncomfortable and that we think we should be happy all of the time. I think that's a very American belief that everything should go well for us. And if it's not, if we're not feeling comfortable or happy, that something is wrong. And it pushes us to ways to make that better. And I think that what you're saying, it seems to me what you're saying is when you recognize that you feel that way is in a sense sitting in it and not trying to do anything about it, but praying, acknowledging it to God and not looking to any other false hope or crutch to make it better for the moment. Is that what you're saying to us?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. Yes. Something that I have found that is helpful is to write some things down and to write the good. And I go back and look at that. Like I tell myself, this is not forever. This, whatever this feeling is, if it's stress at work or if it's with my kids or that it will pass, which I know, you know, that saying, this too shall pass. Of course it will, but it does help me to read and remember when it has passed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back again to that moment when you enter the meeting, you're starting the 6 months, you're sitting in there in silence. Can you take us through the process? What process you went through, especially in your relationship with the Lord? What was he speaking to you? What was he doing in that time? And what process did he lead you through?
I did a program that was very prescribed. And so I'd followed the steps that were told to me. It did take about 6 months for me to follow those steps. But the first thing I had to do was just confess and to say it out loud. There is real power in speaking the words out loud. It's one thing to come to the conclusion in your head, and it's powerful to write the words down. But there is real power in saying it out loud. So for me, once I got to the point where I could meet with a woman and speak it out loud, then that's when the real change started working in my heart.
Mm-hmm. So where were you in a relationship with God at that point? Do you think things took off with him at that point, or?
I had been a believer for years in high school, or even in junior high, and I had really been good at separating the parts of my life, which I would have told you I would have told you I was all in. But as I kind of worked through these steps and really peeled back some layers, I was still holding back from God. And I think that I just didn't trust him with my junk. So I did not have as full a relationship as I thought I did. But once I decided to just fit up, to go all in, as I said before, once I decided to really say it all out loud, yes, I would say that I just came to a much sweeter place mm-hmm. with the Lord, and he did become my comfort.
Mm. Did you feel that same insecurity that you felt with people? Did you feel that same insecurity with God, you think, before?
I think so. I think that I saw a lot of people and I wanted to be like them. I wanted to be, you know, I was working at church and I wanted to be who I said I was at church. I wanted to be the really great mother who, you know, could quote the scripture and lead this Bible study and do the things with my children. And I wrongly thought that other people had it all together. And so that I was not able to do that. And I think that God wanted me to have it all together.
Mm, before he could accept you, before
yeah,
he could use right. you.
Before he could use me, yes.
Which is interesting, thinking about what we talked about at the very beginning about our friendship, and I kind of felt a lot of the same things. And I had different issues, but I didn't want to be vulnerable and say, I don't have it all together. And so that belief keeps us apart from one another, and it keeps us from healing. Yes. It keeps us from growth, because I think you confessing and you saying, confessing that sin to that person in your program was really shining a light, the light of Jesus, into a dark place. And suddenly it opens up a whole new world, I think. And I think it does it relationally as well. I've found that now that I've grown up, you know, since we were in the same town. And I wish that I had seen that same thing as well, that if I was not so concerned about having it all together and impressing other people and trying to fit into some mold that I thought I needed to fit in, I would have been in deep relationships with people and I would really have been growing spiritually, where I felt stagnant and I felt just all wrapped up in myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I, when I confess and when I have shared my story, it has given other people permission to share their story. And so I have really felt that transparency is my call. And so I try to be as transparent when it makes sense to do so. You know, I don't stand right. on the corner. But I think that it does give women, my desire is to give women and people a safe place to share their struggles and to, yeah, just to tell every, we all have struggles and we all have places that we wish were different. Mm-hmm. And we can help each other with that. And we can, relationally, we can, but we have to shine the light on it. Mm-hmm.
So how long did it take you to go from 6 months of sitting in a group silent to speaking about it more publicly?
It took a while. It took a long time. I would say it took me 6 months to even say my name when we went around a circle, to another year before I would say, you know, my name is Jamie. I believe in Jesus Christ and I struggle with alcohol. I couldn't say the alcohol part for another year. But the Lord was patient, and he did not stop giving me opportunities to say that information. And the longer I was with other people who were willing to share, I just felt safer. And over time, but it did take a while. It took longer for me to share it with my family than with strangers.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
I think that there was fear there, and there was some I was unsure of how it would be received, and that wasn't totally unfounded. I think that my relationship with my sister has really grown with this, And just with the my willingness to be transparent, I feel like that relationship has strengthened. Mm,
that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
So now, you're 10 years down the road. Did you say 10 years since you've had a drink?
It will be. It was 9 years in December. So.
Okay. Congratulations. That's great.
Yeah.
How would you say that you are walking forward by faith now? Tell us how you're doing that, what truths are helping you walk forward, but also I want to know what the ongoing challenges are for you.
The ongoing challenges is that I still feel inadequate. I still feel like I'm not enough. I have a challenging job that daily I feel like I'm failing at. And so I have to choose that to believe the truth and to feel that kind of uncomfortableness. Some of the challenges are social situations when I'm in places where I might be one of the only people not drinking. Mm. It's gotten much, much, much better, but there are still times when I'm a little wistful. Like I want to toast the champagne, or I want to, have a blue Hawaiian on the beach on vacation. So I would say those would be some challenges, but the joy is so much greater. I have been a person people have reached out to when they want help. And that is the biggest joy to me, is when I get a phone call and somebody has seen me or heard some of my story and they want what I have. That's the greatest. That is really what keeps me going sometimes.
Are there specific truths that you turn to? I did think a while ago when you were talking, I thought, I wonder what it's like for her to enter social situations now, not just because there's maybe alcohol present, but because that feeling of inadequacy or insecurity, I mean, we all struggle with that in some way, and there's nothing, you can't turn to alcohol to mask that, and you don't want to. But what are some truths that you turn to internally in those moments when you walk in a room, you feel inadequate, insecure? What are the truths that God brings to mind that helps you in those moments?
When I feel those feelings, I am reminded that I am enough, that I am enough. He has provided some really strong supports for me, and so I reach out to those supports. I think accountability helps me. In texting, I've said several hundred times that if there was not texting, I would probably not be sober. But I am reminded that I'm enough, and I'm also reminded that other people in the room are feeling the same thing that I'm feeling. So it has brought me some empathy and some I can just some parts of me can see parts of others who are struggling or who might just be feeling a little bit out of place as well.
So do you go to those people? Do you feel
sometimes,
like, yeah.
Sometimes I do. And try to, I'm 40 now. And so I feel like such a grown up sometimes, and I can do these things. And then sometimes I feel like such a not grown up, but I'm just more sure of my abilities to get through. And it takes practice, the first probably 2 years that I did things sober that I hadn't done sober. I mean, I went to a lingerie shower. And I'm like, do people do these things without wine? I don't know. But it's with practice, the more things I do. And so now I would say I've probably done just about everything. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. But I've done things without alcohol enough to know that it will be, I danced. I danced at a wedding without alcohol. It was funny.
You probably think, oh, I'm not as good a dancer as I thought I was.
No, it's a little awkward.
Well, it seems a lot of what I'm hearing you say is how intentional you are about living, that you are thinking about what you're doing. You are preparing yourself to enter situations. You are intentional about relationships and being vulnerable. There's so much intentionality, and it seems like that is such a key for you. And I love even how you said you were intentional, or you think even thinking about and encouraging us who may or may not struggle with alcohol to be intentional about even just thinking about our how we live. Is there something that we are turning to that it may not be as overt as binging on alcohol, but being intentional to think about those things is the takeaway for me today from talking with you.
Yes, I'm glad that that is what you've gotten. I think that being intentional and being prepared has totally changed how I enter situations and how I relate to other people.
I'm so thankful for you sharing your story. Would you recommend any resources if somebody's listening who is thinking, I resonate a lot with what she's saying, I might have an issue with alcohol. Are there specific resources that you recommend to people?
I work closely with a program called Celebrate Recovery, which I know is nationwide, and they have programs in churches. And so that was the program that I started with and what I used. I'm trying to think what else I would recommend. I think that getting a support team and getting with somebody, if it's not Celebrate Recovery, some sort of program where people can kind of get what you're going through. There's a Celebrate Recovery Bible that I was given that was really helpful.
That's good. Well, any last words of encouragement for someone like that who they're thinking, I just don't know if I can make that phone call. I don't know if I can tell somebody that I'm struggling in, maybe not even in the area of alcohol, but there's something that they just feel like if I told this, people would reject me.
So I have not been rejected one time when I've shared this information, which is huge. So I would just say to you or to somebody, just reach out and ask for help, and it will be okay. It will be, it's really scary. It's crazy scary, but the joy on the other side is worth it.
That's so good. Thank you, Jamie, so much for your time and for being willing to tell your story.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
I love how the theme of friendship and community kept coming up in our conversation. God has given us people in our lives as a gift for our growth and sanctification. I told a young gal in my church just recently that her assignment is to step out of her self-imposed isolation due to insecurity and fear, and to be the one to initiate first. Community is risky and awkward and messy, but so worth it and so helpful for us as we seek God's work in our lives, as Jamie talked about today. Friends, thanks for listening. Next week, you can join me as I talk with Jackie Taylor about fear of the future after difficult life circumstances come our way. Until then, have a great day and keep walking forward by faith.